It's the Security Weekly News, episode 163. Happy fall equinox. I might have worn a costume, but I'm moving today, which is why I don't have anything. Somebody already said, is that a costume? Are you dressed as a nerd? And I was like, well, yeah, maybe. But anyway, welcome to the week of 31 October 2021. Dancing holograms reveal again. Ransomware busts, hiding malware and source code, HTTP header smuggling, free switch, and Jason Wood on the Security Weekly News.
This is Security Weekly. For security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
Every 11 seconds, there's a new ransomware attack. Oil pipelines, universities, corporations, all paying millions of dollars. Barracuda says, don't pay the ransom. Before a ransomware attack occurs, train your teams to recognize an attack and use anti-phishing technology. Protect your applications, and they can't get onto your network. Simple backup and restore solutions quickly recover your data without paying the ransom. Build your ransomware protection plan now by visiting securityweekly.com/Barracuda. That's securityweekly.com/Barracuda.
All right, it's now November. It's time to put up all those Xmas decorations, or if you didn't take them down, it's time to reactivate them, or if you never stopped activating them, well, I guess you're all set. This week in the news, Reveal. We talk about Reveal all the time now. The always popular ransomware and malware gang was back in the news again this week. This time, German police identified a key member of Reveal and claims that the member bought an expensive luxury watch. And I don't know about you, but I bought a Timex watch once. It cost like $19. And then later I actually, somebody was talking about this and I found that there's watches that cost like $30,000 and $50,000. And I was like, well, what does a $30,000 watch do? You know, it tells the time. And he was, well, it tells the time at a depth of water that you would die. And I was like, well, if you went to the depth, you wouldn't actually need to. Anyway, yeah. Anyway, the police said that the suspect has a expensive luxury watch with a Bitcoin address engraved on its dial and also a yacht. And by yacht, I doubt they mean a 10-foot catboat like I have or you know, something like that. But anyway, the person goes by Nikolay K., and is based in, wait for it, Russia, of course. German police issued a warrant for him should he decide to maybe take a quick trip over to Frankfurt or something like that. But according to the story, the German police believe that Nikolay, who is apparently a billionaire anyway, is a part of Reveal. The investigation was based out of some journalists that were tracking Nikolay K via Telegram channels and crypto payments, and somehow, you know, they put all this together. It was one of those, you know, investigative journalism. And they, basically he had an online username that was associated with a bunch of Russian mobile phone numbers and all this other stuff. So one of the numbers led to a Telegram account, which then published a Bitcoin address that they investigated and apparently had been paid more than 400,000 euros. So they then established that the Bitcoin transfers associated were with criminal enterprise. And that was an address that belonged to Nikolay. Now, they didn't say in the article, which I kept expecting, that the address was the one on the watch. You know, I was like, this is how it would work on one of those police procedural shows. You know, like the address on the watch was, and maybe it was, I don't know. But I have a funny feeling this isn't going to result in an arrest anytime soon, really. I mean, you know, Russian billionaire, right, and German police. I mean, I guess it could shape up into some kind of Battle of Stalingrad or something, but yeah. A ransomware group that has allegedly been tied to lots of high-profile attacks around the world has been targeted by Europol, and a dozen prominent members were rounded up in the Ukraine and Switzerland last week. More than $52,000, it doesn't sound like much, $52,000 in cash, luxury vehicles and electronics, and they didn't say anything about luxury wristwatches this time, but all that was seized in an early morning raid. And I do have some bad news for everybody. They always do raids in the early morning. So if they're going to raid you, it's going to be at like 5 a.m. because you'll probably be asleep and, you know, whatever you, you know, you're wearing whatever you wear when you go to sleep and, you know, somebody's banging on the door and you're like, what? You know, and you end up like Tony Soprano in the bathrobe and, yeah, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, the announcement said that this was a professional, highly organized cybercrime group that targeted large corporations and was tied to more than 1,800 victims in 71 countries. Norwegian police, who were a part of this, confirmed that this was the group that hit Norsk Hydro in 2019 with an attack that crippled the infrastructure there. And when Norsk Hydro refused to pay the ransom, they were actually forced to operate without computer systems for several weeks. And the losses they incurred were around $70 million. Law enforcement from France, the Netherlands, the Ukraine, the UK, Germany, Switzerland, the US, and Norway were all involved in this operation that ended up with 12 arrests. So, you know, starting to see more traditional kind of things going after these modern ideas. And as long as we're doing the police blotter today, how about one more? A Russian national, this is a common theme as well, who is accused of being part of the TrickBot gang has been extradited from South Korea to the United States. So we're seeing this more and more, that people that are doing this stuff are getting caught and they're getting extradited and so forth. This person actually made an appearance in U.S. federal court. The name is Vladimir Duniev, and Vladimir is alleged to have been the malware developer that worked for TrickBot Group and was heavily involved in the execution, modding, and stealthing of the TrickBot malware. The indictment claims that between November 2015 and August 2020, Duniev and others stole money, confidential information, and they all did this from a large group of victims. As we all know, TrickBot is a very, very common mechanism for malware and exploitation. They were also doing money laundering. It was basically doing, like, you know, everything you could do. Duniev is charged with, listen to all these, conspiracy to commit money laundering, wire fraud, bank fraud, identity theft. And there was actually a list of a whole bunch of charges that were all kind of around the same thing. The charges could actually result in up to 60 years in prison. So, you know, this is, they're getting serious about this stuff. A type of attack called a Trojan source attack, which some of you are probably familiar with, was discussed in this next article, which basically what that does is it exploits text encoding standards, like in particular Unicode. And Unicode has always been one of those things that programmers know about and forensics people know about. But a lot of, you know, people don't really understand, you know, that Unicode is this different standard that is used pretty widely in a lot of different things. But using this technique, it's a way to hide things inside of other things, since it makes it really hard for humans to actually see and read. So a lot like steganography, which is one of those really popular topics in forensics courses that everybody wants to hear about, you know, and in steganography, you use unused bits in graphic files that just don't, they're not actually doing anything, and you can hide files. You know, you just have to know what the pattern is. So if it's every 17th bit, you've got that many bits to hide, you know, text or another graphic or whatever you want to do. But this particular technique means you can actually hide things inside of source code. So what kind of things can you hide there? Well, all sorts of things that wouldn't just be hidden, but they might actually be executables. Cambridge University researcher Nicholas Boucher and Ross Anderson published a paper that said that this sort of attack could actually jeopardize all source code and pose a threat to first-party software as well as supply chain. And the reason they say that is because if there's things hidden in source codes, it may be really hard to spot those things that are hidden there. They published proof of concepts that illustrated the attacks using C, C++, C#, JavaScript, Java, Rust, Go, and Python. And they went on to say that this type of attack would likely work in just about any modern language. Now, this isn't really new, understand, but this is another approach to the same thing that has been around for a while. The original types of attacks were called RLOs, or right-to-left techniques. They were also called BD override techniques. This new version relies on a couple of CVE problems that were dealing, again, with this old BD stuff, which is basically right-to-left characters like Hebrew or Arabic. So that's languages that are read from right to left. And so this is a kind of like those big Indian, little Indian directionality problems that you run into with like cell phones and certain kinds of computers and things like that. But in this case, the system has to have some mechanism to deal with encoding where Latin characters left to right, like what we use in the United States, are mixed in with like Hebrew or Arabic or anything else, and it creates conflicts in the compiler. So Unicode has this override control character, which produces an invisible character that controls the switching. So if you hide all this in a comment string, so you can actually sort of embed this whole thing in this hidden set of instructions, it may be possible to inject malware into the source code. But, I mean, but wait, it's kind of complicated and it's definitely worth you reading it. And some of you may know a lot more about this than I would. But basically, at the end of the day, it's really a setup for something else. So the hidden source code doesn't necessarily do anything, but it could be triggered. So if you know it's there and you know its location in memory, that when something's executing, so if there are people are playing a video game and there's something hidden in the source code and you know the location of that in memory, you may be able to execute it another way. So it may be a way to sort of do a multi-part attack and so forth. But so it's worth reading if you're into such things. Malware can be delivered via a compromised website on Chrome browsers, which may allow the bypassing of UAC or user access controls and basically run it as admin. I always say root, but it's mostly about Windows, I think. So UAC is a Windows component, so we're all pretty familiar with that. So this is that component that pops up and says, are you sure you want to allow this to do this? Are you sure you want to give administrative privilege to this particular product? And so if you say no or nobody approves it, then it doesn't allow the execution of the elevated privilege, which makes it harder for certain kinds of malware to actually cause problems because you actually have to agree to it. It also lets Microsoft off the hook legally because if, you know, they say, well, we ask you if you're okay with it and you said yes, when you go to court and say this flaw in the system allowed somebody to hack me, Microsoft's going to say, yeah, but you approved it. So they've got kind of an out there. But anyway, Rapid7 identified a campaign which is targeting Windows 10. In a blog post, Andrew M. Iwamaye, I wanted to make sure, I actually tried to say that earlier, Iwamaye, I think is how you say it. Andrew Iwamaye, Andrew, I'm sorry if I didn't say it right. But Andrew Iwamaye said that if a Chrome browser user goes to the malicious site, so again, it sort of has to start with something bad, and the browser ad service prompts the user, well, that may allow various info stealers and other malware to run locally. Examples they cited included that this approach could prevent updates from running in Chrome, arbitrary command execution, and all the usual suspects. The research showed that when this thing was running, it created redirects to suspicious domains in the browser history, and there were a lot of other types of redirects in there before there was an actual infection in the browser history. So it seems like the sites have to convince you to allow these notifications via the browser. So this is almost a phishing kind of thing. And then that alerts the user to update the Chrome browser. And then you, instead of going to the actual update site, it sends you to a legitimate looking Chrome update site. The update then, you know, runs, but it's not the update you thought. The update contains a malicious payload, which then allowed them to set up for further exploitation of the system. So people always going to find all these things out. So, you know, be warned. Daniel Thatcher from Intruder has stated he will present new research on HTTP header smuggling at Black Hat Europe next week in London. I wish we could all be there. Hi, Aaron. Daniel has also said he's going to release a free tool that will test web servers for weaknesses that will allow this type of attack, which the minute I hear that, I'm always like, okay, that's a real attack, right? Like you release a free tool and say there's a dangerous attack. You probably want to test. Here's a free tool. Use it. Apparently not, but I mean, that's me being paranoid. There are two main types of attacks that are in this particular realm, header smuggling and request smuggling. They're related to each other. And they can both affect HTTP and HTTPS requests. So header smuggling is basically placing some kind of malicious or false information that you want to give to a backend server in the HTTP request that gets into the front-end server. So if there's a way to manipulate that so that it passes that information to the back-end server, like a database server or whatever, that would be an HTTP smuggling attack, because you want to actually figure out a way to get through the firewall, to get through all the anti-malware stuff. And, you know, if that HTTP header would allow it, then you've got that kind of problem. According to Black Hat Europe, the demo is going to show how to bypass IP address restrictions in AWS API Gateway, which can lead to a cache poisoning exploit. So that's the demo that's going to be there. So even though Black Hat, you know who you are, did not pay my way to attend, I will still say this sounds like a pretty interesting talk to check out if you're going to be there or if you have access after the con. Daniel did say that there's no evidence of this attack that's being demonstrated in the wild as yet. But as we've seen in the last, I don't know, few months, the minute something comes out, you may well see attacks. So if you are, you know, if you have problems with this kind of stuff, you may want to check it out and make sure your web servers are not vulnerable. Five vulnerabilities were found, count them, five, in the telecom stack software FreeSwitch. Enable Security, which is based in Germany, said that the various vulnerabilities can lead to denial of service, authentication problems, and information leakage if you're running FreeSwitch. If you've never seen FreeSwitch, it's actually been around a while. It's an open source product, so a lot of people have used it for things, and as well as embedded it in things, so now supply chain problem. But the open source product basically enables you to build things like a Raspberry Pi, which is going to act as a telco switch. And a lot of us have worked with telco switches, and as the world moved away from, you know, old stuff to new stuff, there were a lot of people trying to find ways to do telco switching in-house. And this was a really cheap and not really that difficult. I actually set one of those up a long time ago. It was quite interesting product to play with. The vulnerabilities were fixed in version 1.10.7, which was released last week. All the flaws revolve around the web real-time communication tool, which allows audio and video communications in web pages without plugins, and SIP. So SIP is a common telephony protocol that's used for VoIP phones and those web pages and things. So this is how you run a radio station or something like that on a website. You might be using something like FreeSwitch, or you can do like web calling and things like that. So if you're running FreeSwitch or other downstream tools using it, you may want to be sure you have patched up. All right. Jason is going to join us, and you know, breeding new animals on a private island is always an exciting profession, and he did it better than anyone else. Winning the Moreau Award twice, his pit bull koi fish combination is a beautiful aquatic guard animal that will definitely keep the bad guys out of the moat. And his mixing of monkeys with banana DNA resulted in monkeys that not only smelled and tasted better than your traditional monkeys, but they put monkey meat in the peel and eat category. It's none other than Jason Wood.
Hey, everybody. And I'd like to add thanks to Elon Musk for getting me the private island to allow me to do the experimenting.
Hey, I got to say peel awesome. I got to say peel and eat monkey meat. So that's one of my like bucket list items.
You did that. There you go. Glad we were able to assist in that.
Some people want to
today.
Climb Everest. I've always wanted to say peel and eat monkey meat in the public. So,
well, it's a lot easier to breathe when doing that than climbing Everest. So, whatever. So actually, you know, Doug said we were done with the police activity, but I'm going to go ahead and revisit that again. This story is honestly, it's almost humorous, kind of a throwback back to the more innocent days of the internet when pirating movies and music and video games and stuff like that was the digital crime of the century. For those of you who may remember, you know, this is when we were getting takedown notices being sent out to everybody from the MPAA. Napster was a great place to get music. And typically you could find a share somewhere on the computer network there at work of MP3s for you to stream at work. In fact, I can even recall one instance where a CEO at a place I worked called up a friend of mine to complain when one of these shares got taken down. He wanted to know where the music was. Anyway, this story is about a gentleman by the name of Joshua Streit, I guess is how you pronounce that, who was charged with running an illegal sports streaming service. And this netted him 4 criminal charges. But not content to let it go of that, he also attempted to extort $150,000 out of MLB for you know, basically saying, hey, I'll tell the journalists or the public how I do this if you don't pay out. So that it netted him charge number 5 for extortion in federal court. So really kind of what was going on here with this? This is kind of modernizing, I guess you will, the sharing of entertainment materials. In this case, you know, like everybody else, we got to stream it and make it go live. Apparently, what he did is he would get a hold of credentials to legitimate subscribers of these services, and then he had a way of redirecting the content through his server, and then he would pay that out play that out to his subscribers. And apparently, you know, one of the comments in the indictment, he had to have an army of accounts, as he put it, to do this, because he has to stream all of the different games and whatnot. So he had to have lots of compromised accounts to get access to this and then turn around and play it. And he was basically selling access to MLB, NBA, NHL, and NFL streaming services for $129 per year. Now, if you've ever looked at subscribing to any of these services or been a subscriber, you know, these are expensive to get. I can say from my experience of being an MLB subscriber. But in this case, you know, for $129 for the year, you get all of them. So you get, instead of having to have all, what, 4 different mechanisms to get your games, you could combine it all into one. In the end, this ended up being apparently reasonably profitable for him. I assume they don't talk about any numbers for his earnings, but they did say that MLB complained that this cost them nearly $3 million in subscription fees by their estimate. I don't know how they came up with that, but that's the whole thing there. You can read there's a link to the criminal complaint in the Threat Post article that I took the story from, so you can find that in the show notes. But you can also see how the FBI agent who responded to this identified Street. Now, or Straight. I'm not an expert in any kind of OPSEC or operational security by any stretch at all, but this dude didn't make it difficult at all to identify him. He was reusing handles. He was using the same email address for both his illegal activities as well as his more legal type of stuff. Ties back to like LinkedIn profiles and Reddit profiles and whatnot. It was it's a lengthy list to read through. The agent was very thorough on how he went through and documented all this and mapped this out, but it wasn't real hard to point it back to him, basically. But it even gets better than that. Apparently, Straight was having trouble accessing the NBA video streams. NBA is trying to make things difficult for people who are pirating their content. And so it broke his access a little bit. And so he went out and posted on a Reddit forum or a subreddit saying basically, hey, I'm having trouble with this. And he's describing his issues, debugging, and kind of come up with a way to make this work through his site. And so here's a couple of quotes from this Reddit post. He says, I have spent the entire month of May, 16 hours a day, trying to find stable, scalable solutions. Later, he went on to say, if you have expertise in CDNs, scraping, or sketchy shit, I'd love to talk to you. Please reach out to me via any channel. End quote. Now, since the FBI agent who was investigating him had already pretty well documented what all the channels were, he had no trouble reaching out to him and saying, hey, I'd love to help you out. And now the defendant has an FBI agent helping, in quotes, him troubleshoot his issues and come up with a scalable way of streaming NBA games through his service. In fact, he made a comment when talking to the agent that, again, another quote, I have a set of backup feeds right now. They're okay, but I'd like to continue doing my steal from NBA League Pass shit as I have for the last 5 years. It's kind of an oops. You just admitted to what was going on to law enforcement. So this has been progressing, going on for a while here, but it kind of heated up a little bit back in March of 2021. Street decided to get an extra payout, and so he contacted the MLB about a bug bounty. Now, the problem is that the MLB doesn't have a bug bounty program, so they go back and forth for a while, conversation kind of tapers off. He's upset. There was a phone call apparently along the way stating that, you know, where he found out that they didn't have a program. They weren't going to pay things out. So he started getting a little bent out of shape here, apparently. And then finally in September, the conversation of this year, September, or the conversation picks up again. And MLB finally says, like, so you keep talking about wanting money. What are you looking for here? And he demanded $150,000 as his price for silence to not leak out how he was streaming freely the information from MLB.tv. Things apparently went nowhere after this. I'm assuming he got arrested shortly after. I always try to come up with some kind of takeaway for us for corporate security type of stuff, our work roles. I got nothing. It's entertaining to read. It's kind of, the guy is doing something he shouldn't have, apparently, or is alleged to have done it. He's in some trouble now for this. Maybe he's looking at jail time. Maybe he's not. Depends on, there's some debate on that, according to an FBI or a federal sentencing guidelines expert. He may not get any jail time for it, just some fines and probation. Either way, you know, what I would say, you know, obvious takeaway, I guess, for anyone who wants to operate a site like this, pay attention to your OPSEC, because this dude just didn't make it hard at all. The streaming site has been closed. The admin made a post on it saying that he was ceasing every and all operations and that his freedom was in jeopardy. Go figure. Probably my favorite quote from the entire article was from that sentencing guideline expert who said, it's reasonable to say he'll find himself in front of a judge at a sentencing hearing. He appears to have gotten their attention. Now, I don't wish any ill on anyone, but good luck to Mr. Strite. It sounds like he's going to need a little bit.
It's like those guys that used to set up stolen cable for you, right? They come around, knock on the door.
There you go, man.
You're like, hey, you know, I can hook your cable up for you for $25 and you never have to pay again, you know. And it was funny because I knew somebody who was a police officer, and the guy went over to his house and he was knocking on all the doors and, you know, and yeah. And then later he's like, I didn't know what I was doing. I thought I was helping people. You know, that, yeah, those kind of things. All right.
What'd you arrest him for? He interrupted my TV time.
Yeah, that's exactly. And finally, Whitney Houston was a popular and talented singer who died almost a decade ago. But now she's back and hungry for brains. No brains, but she is back in the form of a hologram. Now, William Gibson started all this a long time ago. Actually, other people started it, too. It was even long before, when William Gibson hadn't been born yet. But William Gibson wrote a book called Idoru, which was about a celebrity hologram that, you know, was entertaining and, you know, wanted independence from whatever. But here it is, come to pass. So starting this week in good old Las Vegas, where else, Whitney Houston's hologram took the stage with some living performers and musicians and did a whole set. So Base Holograms wants to bring dead popular entertainments back to the stage so that if you never got a chance to see someone, well, I guess you could sort of see them sort of live now. The company says that if the show does well in Vegas, they'll tour the hologram in 2023, literally. There was no indication if the hologram would be exploited by the label and offered lots of drugs or, you know, have a chance at full-on debauchery in the hotel rooms on the tour circuit. I guess Elvis, Jim Morrison, and others will probably be back next. And that's the news. Thanks, Jason, and thanks you for joining us on Security Weekly News. If you don't want to end up an exploited hologram, get your shots.